welcome to NC Spin, an unrehearsed discussion about issues of interest to North Carolina. Now here's the host of NC Spin, Tom Campbell.
Congratulations and thank you for tuning in this week's NC Spin. We survived what has to have been the most confusing and nasty election cycles ever. Even before the polls opened Tuesday morning, more than 53% of us and of our 7.8 million voters have already cast their ballots, a record number. But it's not over till it's over. And this week's show covers the last-minute movements. This week's panel includes Becky Gray of the John Locke Foundation, Chris Fitzsimon, director of the state's newsroom, John Hood, syndicated columnist and author, and Brad Crone, political and communications consultant. We'll begin our uninterrupted discussion after these brief messages from our underwriters. In more than 21 years on NC Spin, I never endorsed a product or sponsor, but I volunteered to do this message for family physicians. Over the past 40 years, my family doctor could quickly diagnose my illnesses because he knew my medical history. Evidence suggests I'll live longer, have a higher quality of life, and save 33% on healthcare costs. I believe in my trusted relationship with my family physician.
Family Physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Your life is more flexible and efficient than ever, and your energy is too. See how North Carolina's electric cooperatives are building a brighter future for the rural communities we serve at ncelectriccooperatives.com/brighter.
12,000 North Carolina veterans are uninsured with no options to buy health insurance. They fought for us. Now let's fight for them. Let's create a North Carolina solution for covering the uninsured.
To learn more, visit careforcarolina.com.
Government plays a key role in your life, affecting your paycheck, the way you educate your kids, the way you do business. How can you tell if government is doing a good job, making the right choices, spending tax dollars wisely? CarolinaJournal.com tackles those questions every day. The John Locke Foundation publishes Carolina Journal in print each month and on the web each day at CarolinaJournal.com. You'll find exclusive investigative reports on topics no one else is covering. What else? A rundown of the best news stories, editorials, and opinion columns in North Carolina. John Hood's Daily Journal. News stories and important public events at CarolinaJournal.tv. And the voices of the newsmakers themselves at Carolina Journal Radio. In print, on the air and on the web, you can find the information you need at carolinajournal.com.
We now return to NC Spin.
Let's begin the spin. As we said in the introduction, a record number of voters have already cast their ballots. More than 3,800,000, or 53% of all registered voters. But the really big news came Wednesday night when the U.S. Supreme Court announced they were going to let stand a ruling from our state board of elections, which said that so long as a mail-in ballot was postmarked by Tuesday and received by November 12th, it could be counted. Question one to John Hood. This was a bit of a surprise to me since the court had been turning down requests from other states. Why did they allow ours?
This has to do, Tom, with the difference between federal judges intervening in pre-existing state law, which the U.S. Supreme Court has not been a fan of, and in this case, they interpreted this as the state courts making a decision based on the state constitution, and they chose not to get involved yet. It probably doesn't matter a great deal in the whole scheme of things. I have some concerns about the process here, but as far as the actual outcome on the elections, it's probably not going to matter unless we have very razor-thin sort of Pat McCrory versus Roy Cooper in 2016 kind of margins. We still have, though, lots of absentee ballots that haven't been turned in. Some 300,000 North Carolinians requested absentee ballots, have not sent them back in yet, and have not voted in some other way. Now, I think a lot of them will show up on Election Day or the last couple of days of early voting, but we do have some absentee ballots out there that could, in fact, be mailed on Election Day. It would, though, have to be in the many, many thousands, probably, to change the outcome.
Brad, why have so many people turned out? I mean, are they afraid of the virus? Are they just tired of the rancor? What was the reason why 3.8 million people have voted?
Yeah, Tom, it's actually over 4 million as of early Friday morning. It is a combination of the COVID-19. It's a combination of the rancor. It's a combination of both bases really working to turn out their votes. And the unaffiliated voters are performing at high levels at 29.75% of the total votes cast so far. So we're all looking forward to Election Day. There are 4 million people in the state of North Carolina who really are ready to get this over with.
Becky, what does this mean so far as Tuesday is concerned? Can we expect another heavy turnout Tuesday or a light turnout? Either way, what does it mean?
Well, historically, what we know is, yes, there will be a lot of voters who choose to vote on Election Day. There's also a lot of voters who wait until the last day or two of early voting. So I think we're going to see, again, record numbers probably on Friday and Saturday, and then again on Election Day. You know, what I think this tells me is that North Carolina voters are motivated, they're enthusiastic, they are voting in probably record numbers of what we're going to see. And I don't anticipate there to be a tremendous slowdown between now and Election Day.
Interesting. Chris, usually when there is an extremely large turnout, it portends poorly for incumbents. Is that going to be the case this year?
Well, I think it depends on what level that you're talking about. I think this is not a normal year. This is not a normal election. I mean, even the Civitas poll recently had Roy Cooper up by double digits. So I think if you're judging that by incumbency, it's not hurting the incumbent governor. But we'll see how it plays on down the Council of State and with the president. The presidential race obviously is basically always within the margin of error in all the polls. So I'm not sure you can draw that conclusion this year.
I keep reading all these stories from the political pundits, and some of them are a little bit amusing. But one pundit says this whole thing is going to turn on the basis of millennials and Gen Z voters. Another one says women are going to make the difference in this particular election. And still a third one says it's going to be the unaffiliated voters that make the big difference. Brad, are all right, either right, what?
I think all of them are going to be very important demographics, Tom. We're seeing just really high turnout across the spectrum. As far as the ticket for the candidates are concerned, in particular for the presidential race, I think your suburban professional Republicans are really important to watch because of the high rate of crossover of them going in the ballot box and voting for Biden. Another interesting demographic that I'm watching are Reagan Democrats, east of 95 and west of 77. They supported President Trump in 2016. Will they support President Trump in 2020? Another interesting note, Tom, the boards of elections at the county level have been authorized under a state order to be able to open, process, and tabulate the mail-in ballots. So the ballots that are received by 5 p.m. on Monday will be counted and tabulated and reported election night. So when the election results start rolling in, we could have 60 to 65% of the ballots tabulated, and you'll see trend lines set up real quick.
Yeah, this is going to be very interesting and very unusual because we're expecting the vote dump to begin around 8:30 Tuesday night. So we should see some significant votes. Becky, any big surprises so far in this election?
Well, you know, a couple. I mean, one that I've watched is we've watched these early voting come in. The younger voters are, those numbers are really up. Those folks are getting to the poll. The 45 to 60-year-olds are lagging a little bit behind. But, Tom, I wonder if that isn't the demographic that will vote on Election Day. Mm-hmm. So watching some of these things, and I think probably the conversation that we're having today in the last couple days of this election may be very different of those demographics than we'll see next week this same time how people turn out. But one thing that I think is everybody's voting. I'm not seeing a real advantage for Republicans or Democrats. Unaffiliated seem to be turning out. So my co-panelists may disagree with me, but what I'm seeing is everybody's voting enthusiastically, and I'm not really seeing any trends that will indicate what the results are going to look like at the end.
Chris, the following up on Becky's comments, the 45 to 60s, largely male white voters, are predicted to turn out on Tuesday. Now, we're told that this is the Trump vote that should be coming in Tuesday. So if we see a huge surge of voters at the polls on Tuesday. Is that how we can read that?
Well, I think most polls have shown that President Trump's voters are more likely to vote on Election Day, or he leads during the voters that are going to show up on Election Day. The question is, what will the margin be? I think he will win on Election Day. More people will vote for him on Election Day than vote for Biden. But the question will be how many. And I think that you mentioned the unaffiliated voters. They're turning out in high numbers. We don't know which way they're breaking. I think that's that's the other big factor when we try to figure out what's going to happen. I do think election night's going to be fascinating, because I think the it's going to go late into the evening, maybe not in the presidential race, maybe not in the Senate race, but I think there'll be state legislative races that we clearly won't know on election night that will be that close. And that's where a lot of our focus will be, I think.
And I can remember my radio days when we had paper ballots and no electronics in voting. And there were many of them, Brett. I think you did some of these too, where we were 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, still didn't have definitive answers. John, there's been a lot of discussion about voter interference or fraud in this election. Have we seen evidences of it so far? And if so, where?
Not significant evidence. There was a lot of talk of voter intimidation and people worried about legions of Trump or Biden supporters going to the polls and trying to intimidate. That really hasn't happened. It was never going to happen. I think that was an overblown story.
Yeah. another one of the myths. Becky, the presidential contest, Trump and his family and the vice president have been all over North Carolina. If there is a pig path they've missed, they need to know about it. On the other hand, Biden and his surrogates have not been in North Carolina quite so much. Now, 15 electoral votes hinge in the balance. We're told it's a very close state. Why hasn't Biden shown up more here in North Carolina?
Well, I don't think it's any different than what we're seeing across the country. You know, the Biden campaign and how they engage with their voters is very different than the way that the Trump campaign engages with theirs. We've seen the big open-air rallies with thousands of people, I mean, here in North Carolina and across the country, of people coming to support President Trump. The Biden events look very, very different. You know, you have people sitting in those white circles and, you know, very controlled. So the way that Biden has chosen to engage in North Carolina and the way that Trump has and the Trump campaign has chosen to engage in North Carolina are exactly the way that they have chosen to engage in other states. We're seeing it here because we are one of the key states and the path to the White House goes through North Carolina.
Yeah.
But I don't see it terribly different than what we're seeing across the country in other swing important states.
Yeah, well, that's what we hear, and yet they're all over Florida. Brad?
Well, Tom, the important thing is don't worry about the style. Look at the tactical elements that both campaigns are employing. And the Democrats were late to getting into the field in October, but they are in the field, I promise you.
You mean so far as their grassroots kinds
canvassing.
Of...
canvassing.
Yeah,
absolutely. And they had, you know, and one example was in Halifax County on Thursday. They had 43 volunteers out knocking on doors in rural Halifax County. So both campaigns have been turning it on full tilt.
John, the polls still say this is a neck and neck race so far as the presidency. Anything you think it's going to tip it one way or the other between now and Tuesday?
If we've got a strong turnout on Tuesday, then I think that it's difficult, it's dangerous even to try to determine predictions based upon these early voting numbers in a year, as Chris said earlier, that is dissimilar from any other year because of the pandemic and people's changed behavior. But I think talking to Democrats and Republicans in North Carolina, I've concluded that Democrats are a little nervous about the early vote percentages. They're hopeful about the undecided vote, but they're not so happy about the Democratic percentage. And they think that if the Republicans have cannibalized their Election Day totals, then they're okay. But if it looks sort of like 2016 on Election Day, then Trump will win in North Carolina.
Chris, I want to talk about the U.S. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to jump in real quick. I think one of the stories nobody's talking about is a lot of people still watch local TV news. They pick up their local newspaper, and what's on the headline? Record hospitalizations or close to it in North Carolina, record cases, coronavirus cases in the country. That's one of the, it sounds bizarre to say, but it's almost like a sleeper issue. People are going to be either afraid to vote or that's going to be the first thing on their minds, and that doesn't bode well for President Trump.
Becky, let's move over to the U.S. Senate race. This is interesting. It's tightened up because of recent developments as far as Cunningham and marital infidelity, but he's still holding a lead in North Carolina. To what do you attribute that?
Well, the lead is narrowing, and the lead is probably less than half of what it was just a week ago. So I think that his voters are deciding how they're going to vote, and I think this whole thing, this controversy with Cal Cunningham, has resonated through voters, and we're seeing it tighten up. So it is well within the margin of error. I would call that one a toss-up at this point.
There are a lot of Democrats, though, Brad, who are saying, you know, this election is so important so far as tilting the outcome of the U.S. Senate, I'm going to hold my nose, but I'm going to vote Democrat.
Well, that's the case. And I watched a report on WBTV earlier this week where a female voter in outside of Charlotte had said that the concerns that the infidelity charges were between Cal Cunningham and his wife and his family, not necessarily an issue that concerned her a great deal. And she's more worried about what Chris was talking about, the spike in coronaviruses, hospitalizations, increasing death rate here in the state of North Carolina, prescription drugs, and how are we going to reboot and rebuild our economy? And I think that's what the voters are really looking at in the U.S. Senate race.
All right. So I want to ask each of you very quickly, so far as the presidential race, make a prediction for me, John.
I will have to guess that Trump will edge out Biden in North Carolina.
Brad?
Biden wins by 100,000 votes.
Chris?
I think Biden wins by less than that, but Biden wins.
Becky?
I think Trump wins, but I think that the margin is very narrow.
All right, let's move to the Senate. John, who's going to win the Senate race?
I think Tillis has momentum, and he could very well pass Cunningham on Election Day.
Brad?
It's going to be Cunningham's election, 50,000 votes or fewer.
All right, Chris?
I do, too. I think if Biden wins, I think Cunningham will win. I think it'll be roughly the same margin.
Becky, I can only guess.
Well, I think it's going to be Tillis, but I think it'll be probably by 1 point or less.
All right, let's move to some of the congressional races. We haven't talked a great deal about them because there, frankly, haven't been that many that have been that interesting and controversial. But one of them that I want to talk about is in the 8th Congressional District, Mark Walker's seat. He's not seeking re-election. It's a vacant seat. We've got Democrat Pat Timmons Goodson, former Supreme Court Justice, running against Richard Hudson, the incumbent congressman there. The Democrats are pouring huge money into Pat Timmons' contest, Brad.
Yeah, no, and she's got an incredible record. She's run a very good campaign. My friend Thomas Mills has been working on that campaign. Patricia has a very serious record as a centrist moderate Democrat and is putting it to Richard Hudson right now. The Republicans have been pouring money in here. They're very worried. You can see they're worried based on the number of times that the president's been into the Fayetteville market trying to lift up Republican candidates.
All right, let's move over to the 11th district. This is Madison Cawthorn, a real estate broker running against Democrat Mo Davis. John, this has been ugly.
It has been ugly. I think I said this on the show before, but I think that neither party effectively vetted their nominee in that race. It is not a pretty race. I still think it's probably going to be Madison Cawthorn because of the leaning of the district.
Yeah. All right. Let's move over to judicial races. We talked about those a couple of weeks ago. The Chief Justice race, Becky, is still one that is being very hotly contested. We've got Sherry Beasley, who was appointed as Chief Justice by Governor Cooper, running against Paul Newby, who has more tenure than any other justice on the court. Many were surprised when he decided to run against her. How's it looking?
Well, I think it's a hotly contested race. I think it's one that people are paying closer attention to during this election cycle, and that may very well have to do with the litigation and the cases that have dealt with the General Assembly and separation of powers. Just recently, this question about the ballot return, you know, part of that went to the state courts. And so I think as people are understanding more, gee, this is what Supreme Court justices decide, that there's more focus on that race. And I hope there is, because I think it's an extremely important race, that and the other two Supreme Court races
that are on
the ballot.
All right, let's get into that. Chris, so far as it, Justice Seat 2, Supreme Court Justice, we've got Phil Berger Jr., who's been on the Court of Appeals since 2017, running against Lucy Inman, also on the Court of Appeals. How's that looking?
I think this will be close. I think it will not be the closest of the three. I think that Inman has an advantage here. A lot of people who keep up with politics think Phil Berger's name is an advantage, but state legislators, even well-known ones, don't have that big of name recognition. So I think this will largely go how the election goes by party. I think she has an advantage because she's a woman. She has experience. I'd be surprised if Lucy Inman didn't win this one.
Brad, let's talk about the Supreme Court Justice 4 seat. Mark Davis, who was appointed by Governor Cooper, he'd been on the Court of Appeals for 6 years, running against Tamara Berenger, who is a professor at the UNC School of Law, has been a panelist on our show. A lot of endorsements for Berenger from big newspapers.
Berenger clearly is a very smart tax attorney. She's a fellow panelist with us at NC Spin. The time I believe she picked the wrong campaign year to run. The Democrats are going to sweep the Supreme Court. It'll be 7-0 after the election.
Wow. Governor's race, is there anything to tell here? Is this a referendum on Roy Cooper's handling of the coronavirus, John?
I think that's a big issue, but he was frankly leading even before coronavirus came along. And I think that this is the toughest race for the Republicans to win this year statewide.
How about let's go to that lieutenant governor's race? That's very interesting. Mark Robinson, who's from Greensboro, frankly a bit of a pop-off with very controversial statements being made against Yvonne Lewis Holly. The polls show, Chris, that Robinson is leading 3 or 4 points.
Yeah, I think this one will be interesting to watch. I think it'll probably go the way of the governor's race, not nearly the margin. I think it'll be close. But what's stunning is not only did Robinson say these incredibly sexist, racist, homophobic things went on Facebook or appearances, he sort of didn't deny them or didn't put them in context. He said he stood by them all, which is sort of shocking. If he does win, I'm not sure the Republicans will be happy if he's their leading spokesperson in North Carolina.
Amen. Becky, let's go to the – go ahead.
Tom, what you've seen is the Bloomberg organization's put almost $5 million in television in here for Yvonne Lewis Holly, simply because they understand there's a clear-cut scenario where you could have a 25-25 Senate. And for the first time since 1985, the lieutenant governor could mean something.
Makes a difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's go to the treasurer's race, Becky, very quickly. We're running out of time, but we've got the incumbent Dale Falwell running against Ronnie Chatterjee, who's a professor at Duke. Been an interesting race.
Well, and the poll shows that that is neck and neck. You know, I think it's interesting. I think Dale Falwell has the advantage of being the incumbent and doing some really significant things. I mean, just this week, there was $1.6 million issued in the bonds that are coming along, DOT and the roads that connect NC that has happened. So he clearly has the benefit of having the megaphone of an incumbent.
John, the other race that I think we want to hit is the attorney general's race. Josh Stein, the first-term incumbent running against Jim O'Neill. This one's been ugly.
Yes, and it's been a lot closer than people originally thought. But you got to remember, Josh Stein won only barely in 2016. So I think this is another one of these toss-up races.
All right, Chris, let's do the superintendent of public instruction. It's a vacant seat. Kathy Truitt, an advisor, former advisor to Governor McCrory, running against Jen Mangrum, a professor at UNCG. What do we know?
Well, you know, as a lot of these council state races, a lot of these people aren't widely known. Neither has won statewide. Mangrum has run for office in a rural county, Phil Berger's county. The polls I have seen show Mangrum ahead, but this is one of those that will go largely the way the night goes.
All right, labor commissioner race. Brad, talk to us about that. We've an open seat, Jessica Holmes, a Democrat, running against Josh Dobson, a representative in the legislature.
I think Jessica Holmes, being a female and a metropolitan county commissioner, gives her a clear-cut advantage.
Let's move to the legislature very quickly, because the Democrats want to take both houses in the legislature. The Democratic committees are pouring lots of money into these races in the closing hours of the race. Is this a referendum, Becky, on legislative redistricting?
You know, I don't see redistricting being a real key factor in these races. As you're watching me, it's more about local issues. It's about records of incumbents. It's the Republican agenda of lower taxes, limited regulation, better investments in education and infrastructure, reduced spending. You know, I don't see redistricting as a real issue, although it should be, because this is the General Assembly that's going to do the redistricting.
All right. I got a minute left in show. I want to get you to give me your predictions. Either a Democrat's going to take control of either house in this election, John?
I think they will gain seats but fall short of control.
You said that in a column this week. Brad?
Democrats take a small margin in the state Senate and a small margin in the state House.
Interesting. Chris?
I think they will come close in the House. I'm not sure they'll make it. I think the most likely, Brad referred to it, I think there's a real chance, if you look at each race, that it's 25-25.
Becky, I got 20 seconds. Quick.
Republicans hang on, but by smaller margins this time. But they do hang on.
Wow. Well, now you're up to date. Next week, we're going to report what actually happened and why. In the meantime, sign up for our free weekly email newsletter. Be sure to visit our website. Until next week, as always, stay informed and watch out for the spin. In more than 21 years on NC Spin, I never endorsed a product or sponsor, but I volunteered to do this message for family physicians. Over the past 40 years, my family doctor could quickly diagnose my illnesses because he knew my medical history. Evidence suggests I'll live longer, have a higher quality of life, and save 33% on healthcare costs. I believe in my trusted relationship with my family physician.
Family Physicians, your trusted healthcare advisor for life.
Your life is more flexible and efficient than ever, and your energy is too. See how North Carolina's electric cooperatives are building a brighter future for the rural communities we serve at ncelectriccooperatives.com/brighter.
12,000 North Carolina veterans are uninsured with no options to buy health insurance. They fought for us. Now let's fight for them. Let's create a North Carolina solution for covering the uninsured.
To learn more, visit careforcarolina.com.
Join us next week and get the spin on issues facing our state. For more information or to learn how to contact us, visit our website, ncspin.com. NC Spin is a copyrighted production of Carolina Broadcasting System, Incorporated.